Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
All right, welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast. So glad that you are here. We're going to be interviewing, and we're broadcasting live from the IoT Solutions World Congress here in Barcelona, where food is fantastic, as well as a few gin and tonics. They're good, too. Anyway, we're going to have a wonderful interview with a gentleman by the name of Jake Gastillo.
Good job.
Did I get it? Really?
Yeah, Gastillo.
Gastillo. Okay. Dun & Bradstreet, that's who he's working with. And we're going to be talking a little bit about blockchain and other things that are technically specific to Dun & Bradstreet and Jake's business. So stay tuned. We are coming live once again from the IoT World Congress here in Barcelona. All right, Jake. Thank you very much for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being had. Hey, I'm telling you, man. Did you go out last night?
I did not. No, I flew in.
Well, that's yesterday. Just going to have to... I did too. We still went out last night.
I don't sleep well on planes, so...
Yeah, I don't too. I just... You're just... Okay. As I look out, he's not committed to... I'm just kidding.
I am lame. And I... Yeah.
Oh, geez. We had our plane, our flight canceled because we had a storm going through Louisiana. And so we were just wandering around. And then we finally get on a flight. And, of course, it has multiple stops. And then we finally landed at, 6:30 here in Barcelona yesterday. And so we get to the room. It's like, hey, why don't we just sort of stretch out a little bit? 3 hours later, you're like, well, what the? Ah, I went I'm in time warp now.
But, yeah. I just went down to the hotel restaurant. And I believe everyone in the hotel was for this conference, and everyone was down there as a single, and they sat us all facing the same way so that nobody could look at each other. And I could hear the crickets outside. We were indoors, and I could hear the crickets outside. It was very uncomfortable.
Yeah, that does sound uncomfortable. By the way, I noticed that you have fancy socks.
I do have fancy socks. I actually purchased some socks for the conference in particular. My wife... was very proud of me for purchasing these socks.
And so you should be, because I have fancy socks. I call them pod socks. You will be getting a pair because you've been on this podcast.
Oh, nice.
Pod socks. And they're fun pod socks.
Good. Yeah, fancy socks are expensive, so I like it when I get them for free.
Well, I get mine from a special place in Asia.
All right.
So anyway.
When you buy them in bulk, you get them for cheap.
We do. We buy them in bulk, that's for sure. That's good. All right. For the listeners out there, Jake, give us a little background on who you are and why you're such an incredible professional. How long have you been with D&B?
Actually, I've been at Dun & Bradstreet for 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah, there's actually a lot of long-tenured people at Dun & Bradstreet. I think it's because it is a very old company. It's over 175 years old.
Huh.
So,
Dun & Bradstreet, they've seen a lot of change.
That is
amazing, especially today here in when you're here at Barcelona at this particular conference. Man, technology's everywhere, and so we're going to talk a little bit. Are you active out on LinkedIn?
The answer is yes, because we're going to continue
to pump. Go out to LinkedIn and find this. And Jake, Gostillo is his last name. I'm already worn out trying to pronounce it. What nationality is that?
It's kind of a combination of Polish and Hungarian. So,
I see.
It's kind of difficult to determine exactly where the ancestry came from, and we've tried. But
I'm telling you, you've been to Poland before?
I have not.
You need to.
I have heard.
It's fantastic. It is. It's one of the best countries I've been to. Not to say Spain isn't for you out there.
No, everybody that I was talking to on the plane, because my first stop was in Heathrow, they just said, oh, I love Barcelona. Every single time.
Absolutely.
Oh, I love Barcelona.
Okay, so... You're going to be active out there on because we're going to be venturing into, because this conference is all about technology, we're going to venture into the subject that I'm very interested in is just blockchain. What is it? And why is Dun & Bradstreet so focused in on it? I mean, that is such an interesting, I mean, so lay it out for the listeners out there, the old way of doing business. It's like, the old way, and then why is this tech so important?
The old way of doing business. I don't necessarily think of it in those types of ways. And in fact, unfortunately, it requires a lot of context to get to that question. So I will say that when it comes to blockchain, if you want a good description of what it is, it's actually a combination of technologies. I call them the three pillars of blockchain.
There it is. Take note. Get your pen and paper out. We're going to talk about the three pillars of technology. Number one.
The first pillar of technology for blockchain is cryptographic identity.
Well, you see, first off, I can't spell cryptographic. I can get to the identity. No. So pillar one is
cryptographic identity.
Got it.
Which is actually over four decades old. It's just something that has been very difficult to use and hasn't really had a use case to spark the imagination of the people to actually adopt using it in ways that can become large scale enough to...
But explain to us a little bit about what that is. What is it?
So with cryptographic identity, there are algorithms that are used to... There's two things that it can do. One, you can encrypt information. So basically you have a private key, which turns into a public key. You can encrypt information.
See, you're going fast.
Oh, sorry. Yes,
you live in this world.
It is.
So you got... See, when you say key, I'm reaching in and getting a key.
Yes, a key is just a very big number. That's all it is.
Oh, okay, so okay.
Everything is math,
okay.
So everything is just a number.
Got it. Okay, so the key is represented by whatever. If you download software, you always have to have sort of a key to start it up.
Yes.
Okay, I got it. Good.
So that represents just a very large number. The two ways that you can use this key. One, you can actually encrypt information for someone else to read if you know specifically who they are. But the other thing that you can do is that you can use your private key to generate a signature to validate that you were the person that produced this piece of data. And that's actually the portion of it that blockchain uses. So this is the identifier. This is how when you are transmitting things over the internet,
yeah,
you can say, I did this and nobody else did.
That's interesting. So when you get like a company like DocuSign, whatever, and you're looking at a document, and then I can digitally sign that. Is that sort of like that key? I can say, yeah, this here, it's me.
It uses a lot of cryptographic identifiers. I'm not entirely sure how DocuSign works. I don't want to say, like, no, they don't, and then DocuSign come back, yeah, we do.
No. It's the fact that they know through whatever tech,
yes,
that's me, and I'm obligated by that signature,
yes,
and that's the unique identifier, the key.
Right.
So I got it. That's cool. Okay. Now, number two. So now you can identify me through a big old long number.
Right.
I've got keys. So what's number two?
Number two is the distributed database. So this is the idea that everybody has the same information. So this uses a lot of hashing in order to determine, make sure that the copy of data that you have is the exact same as the copy of data I have. So when you hear about blockchain, like everybody has the entire blockchain downloaded if they actually want to be a full participant, a full node in the blockchain, that is basically you have the entire ledger of the entire history that happened in that blockchain. You have it downloaded, and you can verify it through these hashes to say that the one that's on my computer is the exact same one on your computer. So it's all distributed, and through this distribution, you have the entire history of everything that happened.
Specific to that blockchain. Okay, so help me understand, define a blockchain. Like, okay, you say blockchain. Here it is. Tell us a little bit about what that is, so that I got the distributed. But when we start talking about that blockchain, so I could be a node in that blockchain.
Yeah. So a node is basically a peer-to-peer kind of agent. So you connect with other people in the group, and when you want to download pieces of the blockchain to know what's happened in the past, you download them from your peers, and when you want to actually push a transaction out to the blockchain to actually do something on the blockchain, then you have a group of peers, and they are in turn connected to other people, and they are in turn connected to other people.
If you were part of a blockchain, we're you and I, you're a node, I'm a node, and I want to do business with you, and we've got this distributed database, and what about the confidentiality? What about other nodes within that blockchain? I can be specific to you, right?
In some cases, for private blockchains, that's possible. A lot of what would people think of blockchains? They think of the public blockchains, the ones where you're exchanging cryptocurrency.
Right.
In those cases, when I send a transaction that is meant for you, everybody in the world will know that I did that.
But they don't get the detail. Do they get the details of it?
They absolutely get the detail. The point of the detail that they don't get is that the only way that you're identified is through your cryptographic key. So you're not identified as Scott. You're just this cryptographic key. You can make as many cryptographic keys as you want. You can just keep spitting them out, and you say, well, pay me at this one. And instead, no, pay me at this one. Or do a transaction to these particular.
So I'll see the details of whatever transaction is going on, but I will not see that. I can't see you, Jake. There's a number. You're represented by a number. I'm represented by a number. But you know that it's me because you know my number, whatever.
Yeah. And in a way, it's one of the ways that I like to think of it is almost like a giant post office box. So when you basically tell me, when you want to pay me, just put it in this post office box and I'll be able to get it. And everybody has access to this exact same big post office box, and everyone can see the transactions that are going into the post office box. So, but at the same time, nobody knows who can actually read which one or can utilize the transaction from.
Okay, so how, and we're going to get to the, so don't hang tight. I've got it. I'm a trained professional, and we're still not, didn't need to go down to number three, but I'm digressing here because I want to know and I want to be able to grasp. What makes blockchain, the technology, the logic, far superior than what we have today?
It really depends on your use case. In a lot of use cases, it is not superior. Where it really shines is when you have a marketplace where people need to transact and you can't necessarily trust everyone or each other. So one of the things that blockchain is it's called censorship resistant. And basically that means that nobody can stop a transaction from occurring. And in a way, a lot of people think of censorship as sort of, you know, I can't send something to North Korea, or you know, these people are on a list that I'm not allowed to do transactions with. And so censorship is a way of getting around the government. But I think a better way of thinking about censorship is I heard a presentation from Walmart, who was doing food safety on the blockchain.
Right.
And someone asked him, why blockchain? Why not just have this as, you know, any kind of Walmart-led solution?
Right.
And he said, if we do a Walmart-led solution, we're not going to get Target to join. We're not going to get Kroger to join. Because censorship implies ownership. So if you own a solution, you are allowed to censor everything that's going on. If you don't own a solution, it becomes much more inviting for people to actually do transactions and businesses with you. Because if Walmart decides in 2 years, this isn't really working for me, but Kroger's like, no, we love it. You know, what does Kroger have to do about it? They have to, you know, the whole thing's trash. They have to set it up on their own.
Right.
Like, no. If it's a blockchain, it just keeps going. And yeah. Kroger can manage it.
Okay, let's go to pillar number three. So what we have, just real quick, cryptographic IDs. This is all the blockchain, three pillars. Cryptographic ID, distributed database, sort of that common platform that everybody can sort of access, right? And number three.
So temporal proof. That's the idea that something happened at a certain time. And the way that this works is through things like proof of work. So when you have proof of work, basically what you have is a very difficult and complicated algorithm that takes a long time for machines to process. And the difficulty of this algorithm is changeable, so it keeps changing. And proof of work on Bitcoin basically says that a block should be found every 10 minutes. And if you have something that's found every 10 minutes, and then you have this whole history of things that were found, you know, on average every 10 minutes, you look at a transaction, you say, I know that this actually happened at this date and time.
That's amazing. And sorry about that. That's my computer, if you're listening to it. Everybody who has a computer knows that I'm being notified of something, so I can't stop it. Sorry. But because I'm a professional, I just power on through.
That's right.
And shamefully. Anyway, so, but we all talk about the Bitcoin, right? But let's talk about other applications. So you got these this fairly important pillar solution, just bottom line stuff. But what else is it being applied to?
It's being applied to a lot of different things. And the other thing too is there's a lot of hype around blockchain, and honestly, I love it. And you have a lot of people arguing like, well, that's not actually blockchain, when they're, because it's a solution that's focused on maybe just one or two of the pillars that make up what blockchain is. And because of the innovation and the work that are being done, I'm all for the hype. But one of the more important things to come out with blockchains is the idea of these smart contracts. So blockchain in Bitcoin, they're basically just very, very, very tiny scripts that say, send this much Bitcoin to this address. And here's my signature saying that this is allowed. And so these tiny scripts, they're thrown out as transactions, and everything gets put in a block, and then the whole thing gets canonically put in history. With smart contracts, you actually have very expressive code that, and in the case of Ethereum, these smart contracts also act as first-class citizens. So because I have a private key, I'm a first-class citizen. I have an address that you can send Ethereum to. Smart contracts on the Ethereum blockchain also are first-class citizens, so they can act as... when you deploy a smart contract, it actually has an address. You can pay the smart contract. The smart contract can pay other people. The smart contract can call functions in other smart contracts. So it acts as a first-class citizen. One of the really nice things about this, when it comes especially to identity, which is kind of always been my focus, is that these smart contracts can now act as a proxy. So one of the most difficult things about private key technology, and why cryptographic identity really hasn't taken off, even though it is four decades old, is because holding a private key, being a steward of a private key, is insanely difficult. And it's also kind of scary, because you have to not only keep it completely safe and secure.
Because if I got your key.
Yeah, if you have my key, then you're me at that point, yeah, as far as anybody
that's
knows.
That's exactly right.
So you have to keep it secure, and you also have to make sure that you never lose it. So, you know, keeping it secure usually means burying it somewhere.
Right.
But also never lose it, because if you lose it, then you can never prove that you're yourself. And if you have any history that goes along with that key, then it's gone. Because you can never...
Right.
Like, in order to make the key secure,
right,
it has to be randomly generated.
That's
you can
it.
Never do it again.
And I know people have lost their keys.
Yes.
And that ain't a good day.
Right. So with smart contracts, you can actually have a proxy identity that is set up to respond to any number of keys, and you can change those keys out. So let's say I have five keys, and one key is only allowed to do certain things based on my proxy contract, and I have another key that can do anything in my proxy contract.
Right.
And I have a backup key that the only thing that key can do is I can go in and say, like, well, I lost my main key, now I want to change it. So that proxy contract can actually keep up and become your identity. And
wow.
So this is these are the types of things that are really.
Jeez.
Really,
Jake, this
me.
Is not this. This is a solution that requires professional people.
Yes. And actually, that's amazing that one of the things that we're very excited about with the IoT conference and IoT in general is it requires a professional. I think it requires hardware. I think that these types of solutions really need hardware to push them forward and to actually make them secure environment and have people able to use them.
Because it is. If the technology is so complex and so, I don't know, difficult to understand, nobody's going to use it.
Right.
But you want it to get used.
Yes.
But they can come to you because you're out on LinkedIn and you're pretty active on there, right?
That is true. I will respond to messages on LinkedIn. I do that, yes.
All right. Thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk Podcast, Jake. And I'm telling you, we're talking blockchain. And if your ears are bleeding, as of mine, you just sort of, you're in good company, because my ears are bleeding. So we've had three pillars. Go back, take note. reach out to Jake. If that's something that is very important to you, Dun & Bradstreet is the place you need to go. And once again, be bold, be brave, dare greatly, change the world. And once again, go out to Internet or Industrial Internet Consortium. That's IIC. They're a big sponsor here, and they're fantastic people nonetheless. So go out to IIC, that Industrial Internet Consortium, and find out more from what they do, because they provide a great product. And once again, thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk Podcast. We will be back with another great interview like Jake right here.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.